Welcome to Gear Talk. I am Chip.
And I'm Chris.
I'm Annie.
And this is Brooke.
And this week, we're going to talk about GPS / wearables for swim run.
A rather often requested topic from the fans. And of course, hotly debated. You have people who are Garmin folks or Polar folks or Suunto or Coros. You name your wearable brand. Yeah. I'm sure there's someone who's willing to die on a sword for it.
On a watch?
Yeah. But before we get to that, does anybody have any updates on previous gear reviews or things that we've talked about on the show?
I do. I have a confession or an expose.
An expose?
Yeah, it's an expose. So I was so stoked when I found this Aquasphere pull buoy for my budget swim run setup that
$6 free shipping. If I remember correctly.
With baller free shipping, and it cost $6. And for that reason, I was like, I need to do some fact checking on this thing because I can afford to. And so I ordered it. This was the one where, if you haven't listened to the show, I was like, this thing, based on the measurements shared on swimoutlet.com, sounds enormous. It sounds like it's a contender for the Mondo pull buoy category, and it's $6. And then I said, unless the measurements are wrong, and the measurements are wrong. It came and I was like, how can a Mondo pull buoy fit in that box? And then I opened it and it was just a normal pull buoy. I think though, all hope is not lost because it is $6 with free shipping. You should just order two and glue them together.
Like
that's what Brooke said.
Nice. There you go. $12.
Well,
and some glue, whatever that costs.
Speaking of Mondo pull buoys, Chris and I got our hands on the Arc Keel Plus.
Or our thighs, to be precise.
wrapped around the Arc Keel Plus. So, first impressions, I took this for a swim run and a pool swim, and I did some testing, some scientific testing in the spirit of the swim run.
Look at you getting all scientific.
Labs, which actually cost me, $500 to $600 yards total of my swim. As Chris is like, I'm at 4,000. I'm like, that's right, I'm taking full rest in between. So I measured four different ways. I did a 100. This is all 100 yards. A 100 with no gear, just myself and my swim speedo. Two,
I'm glad you were wearing a speedo.
I was wearing bottoms.
This was a public pool.
It was a public pool.
It wasn't Sunday.
No.
It was Sunday,
actually.
Oh, okay.
I can't speak for Chris, though.
In the lane next to
you. Okay, so a 100 with nothing, kind of as a baseline benchmark, what's my 100 like? And I tried to do it around 85 to 90% effort, so it was a good... I was huffing and puffing by the end. I took a full recovery, so either the time that it took me, so I think I was like, I have the data in an Excel sheet. So I took, like, let's just say 2 minutes recovery in between, and then I did 100 with just the Roka Pro pool buoy. That's kind of your standard size one. Tested the Arc Keel, and then 100 with the Arc Keel Plus. Then I took a large rest. Then I did another 100 benchmark swim, and then I snaked back around doing the hundreds again. So I went back down the pyramid from the Arc Keel Plus to the Keel to the Roka to nothing.
Oh, nice. You switched the order.
Yeah, so I switched the order there. Yep.
You use paddles?
No paddles. So just the buoy only. Now, I will say in my testing, the Keel Plus was faster than the Keel by about 1 to 2 seconds per 100.
Wow. That's impressive. And how much faster was that off of your base 100?
Oh man, I don't even know. I want to say it was like 9 seconds.
Yeah, that's what I remember. Okay.
It was pretty noticeable. And the no buoy compared to the Roka, there was not that much of a difference with just your standard small, standard kind of pool buoy. So that was another interesting tidbit as well. And I will say, Chris, I'll be curious to hear what you think as well. The Keel Plus is too big to swim with the pool, like you need your shoes on, you need your wetsuit, you need other stuff to kind of...
Oh, because it flip turns?
Yeah, yeah. You can't even flip turn properly with it. It's so...
If kind of like wrestling the keel in between your legs is like, you know, taming a horse or something, this is like...
But maybe that's the manatee. Workout.
Like a taming a little, manatee.
Yeah, it's like a core workout on every flip turn.
Yeah,
Core and adductor workout.
Yeah, I found flip turns are really hard, and I also noticed... because I was sticking out of the water, like it felt like I was out of the water, I kind of was fishtailing more than I normally would have, so I couldn't keep that tautness.
Hmm. Yeah. So I I did a very non-scientific test. I did the gut test, or, you know, in auto racing it's called the butt dyno.
You reached out with your feelings?
I reached out with my feelings, and instead of doing hundreds, I did essentially 2,000 with 500 with the regular keel with paddles, and then 500 with the keel plus, and then did that again with the regular keel and the keel plus. And the keel plus was definitely faster. Felt faster, and the time was faster. Again, I wasn't trying to have it be scientific or anything.
What was the time difference?
It was about like 35 seconds.
Ooh.
So it was pretty substantial.
That's an extra 35 seconds you could spend at an aid station eating a cookie.
Yeah, or 35 seconds I could spend at an aid station getting mad at Chipper for eating a cookie.
Yeah, there you go, Chip. This is actually for you.
But yeah, I mean, I think Chipper did the lasso mount for me, and I hadn't been using that. I've been using sort of the simple, like, one rope thing. I don't know what that one's called, but it's basically you put a hole in it and then you just...
Like the one that they do, that ARC does for you?
No. So the one that ARC does is the lasso method.
Which we have a YouTube video about as well.
Yeah. My method is just you take one piece of string and then you just make a knot on one end, and that's kind of like your waist belt, and then you just kind of like...
Oh, I see.
It's like a flying V.
And then you just stuff it in?
You just stuff it in. But what I like about that, especially with the keel, is that it helps it kind of stay in place. So you're not really using your abductors to kind of like keep it in or whatever. And I found with the lasso method was a little bit harder to kind of like manage the keel plus. I mean, I ended up just keep putting knots in it to try to shorten the lasso piece. Yeah. I think it just takes a little bit of practice, but, you know.
Because the method you have basically pulls whatever buoy you have more into your crotch.
Right, right. Yeah. This one, I kind of had to like hold it in there a little bit more, which is
interesting experiment. Like, what attachment method saves like muscle fatigue?
And we were also talking about this too, is, you know, the buoy might be faster in the pool, but if you take an extra 5 seconds every transition to get
it
back
it
up
between your legs underwater. Yeah.
So is it net actually saving you time? It might be time faster in the water, yes. But if a smaller one's easy for you to wrangle in and out, you got to consider those things as well.
Yeah,
it's
energy,
almost like, like
costs.
I think you'd have to figure out if fatigue is like a constant in using the different pool buoys or whatever.
Did you guys have any sense of like how it felt on your body position? Because I know that extra flotation
It's very long.
Can cause some like arching in the lumbar spine, lower back for people.
I think it's hard. Well, use it with like a full kit on.
Yeah,
so
I didn't notice that in particular. I will say with the full swim run kit with the shoes and the wetsuit, not super noticeable. I did feel like I had that kind of like curve going just in the pool with just the buoy. Mm-hmm. And I will say I was swim running with one of our friends, Sandrine, who is more petite. She's probably like around your size, Annie, and I let her try the keel plus, and she said it was too big, like she couldn't really manage it, but she took off on me. And when we were swimming, I usually am probably 25 yards behind her normally, like trying to keep up. With the keel plus, I was within 2 strokes of her feet, but when we switched, she pulled away from me by probably 100 yards.
Interesting.
So
another
unscientific
test. You think
it's just
that extra confidence boost of a plus between her thighs?
I don't know.
We'll have to ask her.
We'll have to ask her that question.
let's have Sandrine on the show and ask her that question.
Well, I'm just going to say, this isn't the keel plus full review.
Yeah,
we'll kind of like save that for later. Okay. But Brooke, I think you had another update.
Yeah, I have a quick update. So I was talking about how I got the Corp. I was fit, snuggly.
Wait, review what exactly is the Corp?
Oh, the ARC Corp wetsuit. I ordered it. And I, my size and height or weight and height put me in the, clearly in the medium category, but I was surrounded by an S box. And apparently I should have sized down. I reached out to ARC asking if I could return it. And they kindly said, no, that our website suggests you size down if you're in between sizes. So I would just recommend to anybody out there who is buying an ARC, if they are in a specific size, but they're kind of, they're next to another size just to the left of them, then size down.
So I'm going to add another little wrinkle to that as someone who has the VIG. I was solidly, I'm usually like just your standard medium person. Mm-hmm. And I think I could have sized up to a large.
Oh my gosh.
So, whoa. So I think it might be suit specific, which just makes it a little bit more annoying.
That's a curveball.
But yeah, just wanted to put that out there.
You and it like, sounds like they don't accept returns.
Yeah,
for
so
size
once
reasons.
You've used the wetsuit, no returns. Yeah, which I was a little disappointed at because I felt like I followed the instructions and everything. Right. But it's a training drag suit now, and I guess I have an excuse to buy another expensive wetsuit.
Yeah, I feel like, well, maybe I'm trying to look on their site real quick if they like they don't have any specific thing about their, here's the size guide. Yeah,
they
don't
do say at the bottom of
returns.
The size guide, if you are on, if you're between sizes, size down. But between sizes, I guess, is kind of the iffy language. You know, what does that mean? Like if you're squarely in a medium, but you know,
right.
one
like
size
a,
over
it's
is
like
a small,
state of
is
mind.
That considered between sizes and not medium? Yeah. I guess to them it is. Yeah. So you should size down.
Okay. Well, thanks for updating us on that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good to know. I think people, you know, just more another, information, the better. Yeah. Knowledge is power.
And everybody's body type is different too. So maybe for some people that is not true, you know,
right.
It just depends where you carry your mass.
Have you used it again since that one swim where you were getting water down your
back? I used it on just an open water swim in the ocean.
Same situation with the water leakage?
Yeah. Oh, and okay. it's like down my whole back and in my arms, unfortunately.
Ooh.
But with the short sleeves, not with the long sleeves. But it was good temperature-wise in like 57-degree water. Oof. For like a 2,500-meter swim.
Cool.
I have not used it. I was going to go on a swim run today, but it's like apocalyptically smoky outside.
Yeah, save your lungs.
Been having gnarly
it's not happening.
Smoke for everyone here on the West Coast. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, without further ado, let's dive into the GPS thing here. So this, there's a couple statements we're going to make before all this. One is obviously a GPS watch or a timing device isn't a mandatory part of you having fun in swim run. We're just going to say that.
Yes.
You can totally race. You can totally train without a watch.
Shocking, but true.
There's the statement. Two, there's a lot of considerations into a timing device that we're going to talk about here. And we're not going to kind of get into the argument around, which GPS watch has the most accurate, you know, if you run a 400 on the track, oh, this one said 410, this one said 380. We're not doing that stuff. That's better served with someone named DC Rainmaker, who's like the gold standard of analysis like that. So
yeah, if you want to geek out, we'll have the links in the show note. You can go that route.
Yeah, and so we have a bunch of considerations, but I do think there is a specific one around heart rate monitoring, which, you know, there's kind of your chest strap. Some of these, most of these watches now have it built in on the wrist, like your Apple Watch or Garmin. A lot of places have that. So we wanted to give the floor to Annie to give a little bit of her thoughts, which are very pro-level thoughts about different heart rate monitor
super pro
systems, I guess. Or how would you phrase that, Annie?
Different heart rate monitoring methods, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
So I've been down this rabbit hole a few times before, and I'll spare you the full contents of the rabbit hole. But I think it's safe to say that optical heart rate monitoring, which is the technology that they put in the wrist sensor for a lot of these GPS watches or sport timing devices, it has come a long way. It used to be wildly inaccurate, and it's improved in its accuracy, but it's still just not going to ever be as accurate as using a chest strap to monitor heart rate. And so if you're a person who really depends on heart rate to guide your effort levels during training, or engages in a very sort of tight interval training or zone-based training, considering that is probably worth it. And otherwise, I think it's not that important to get granular with your heart rate monitoring. Like a lot of swim run is, other than maybe specific workout sessions, a lot of swim run is pretty steady state. And if you want to have an idea of what your heart rate's doing, or use that optical heart rate monitor for 24/7 heart rate monitoring to just get a sense of what are my fatigue levels, how am I recovering, I think it serves that purpose really well. So basically, unless you are a devoted heart rate zone trainer, it's probably sufficient to have a wrist heart rate monitor. That said, it's never going to be quite as quickly responding or accurate as a chest strap. I will stop now.
Well, and I want to add to Annie's point, like Annie, you told me like early on, and I've taken this to heart, that like measuring your RPE, rate of perceived exertion, can be really beneficial, like, and not relying so much on heart rate. Like you've taught me, you know, to really like be in tune with my body and know.
And your feelings.
When I'm like, yeah, when I'm, when I'm like putting that effort, you know, to a, maybe a zone 4 or 5 training versus a zone 2, 3. And I think that's like really important too. And in swim run or any endurance sport, is to just be in tune with what your body's doing, especially for women. And we know like how our body behaves differently throughout the month, and relying entirely on heart rate isn't always accurate either. Totally.
The other footnote I'll add to that is, in my experience, I'm definitely a more run by feel kind of person, but I found that the wrist-based heart rate monitors, they might not be 100% accurate, but whatever it's telling you, it kind of remains consistent. So if it's normally 10 beats off,
it's the same data set.
Right, it's the same data set. If it's normally 10 beats off in any direction, you can sort of account for that once you kind of understand what your normal heart rates are. So, you know, you can just do the math and somewhat accurate that way.
Yeah, and Annie dropped a lot of great knowledge in here that we're going to include in the show notes of this episode, going into way more details about why there's such a discrepancy between those, but I really appreciate you dropping that in here. So we have, so here's a few bullet points of what we are kind of recommending to look for in the timing device. One, does the watch have GPS? Meaning, does it send satellites so it can track you, that you can see where your journey went? Heart rate monitor, maybe it has it built in, or can it accept a signal, usually via Amp Plus or Bluetooth, to a chest strap or any other, you know, they have arm heart rate monitors, different things like that. Obviously, battery life is a pretty huge consideration. You know, are you just racing shorter 10K swim runs where you need an hour, or are you racing the Ultra World Championship where you might need 15 hours of battery life? And that is not just battery life, like walking around at the mall, GPS, and doing all these different activities on the watch, because these watches can do so much now. You know, are you listening to music? Is it connected to a foot pod? Or what GPS type are you? All those account and drain your battery at different ones. And again, DC Rainmaker has like the definitive kind of guide about which is the best settings. But we also have some kind of like crib notes that we'll include in the show notes there. Obviously, if you're going to be swim running, it should have at least some waterproof capabilities, at least to 3 meters. And a multi-sport setting or a swim run specific setting, we'll go into there. Can you use it for pool and open water? You know, ease of use. And then, you know, just another consideration, like, is this going to be your only watch that you might want a couple extra features, like you can listen to music, or is it just for your sport?
Right.
Training watch.
Are you trying to make a fashion statement with your giant watch?
Yeah. did we miss anything there?
No.
I don't think so. Good. I don't think so. So why don't we, with all that kind of put out there, when we're thinking about a swim run watch, we're obviously talking about a watch that should have some sort of multi-sport setting that either comes built in or that you can sort of create your own kind of workout or thing, right? And most of the watches do that. Different watches will be a little bit more of a pain in the butt to kind of get it set up. The Garmin watches actually come with that built in. So I think that's one thing where the more you understand kind of what you're looking for, it can help along the way. We've all used a bunch of different watches, so I thought it might be helpful to just talk about the watches we've used and why, and kind of take it from there, sort of roundtable style.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it.
All right. Who wants to go first?
Chris, go first.
Oh, geez, so much pressure. I don't know what to do. So I've used a whole bunch of different Garmin watches and Suunto watches, and I'm currently using the Fenix 5, which is no different than the Fenix 5S, except for Fenix.
The glass type?
Yeah, there's
crystal
different glass type.
The
newer one has like music capabilities or whatever. Right. I think the S is just smaller. And then now there's a Fenix 6, which I haven't tried, but essentially it's the same tech. And the reason I got the Fenix was because it had a multi-sport setting, and it's a multi-sport watch, but it was also like a little bit, it seemed to me a little bit tougher. Mm-hmm. It seemed like a better fit for swim run and sort of trail running where, you know, every couple of months I'm good for a major fall. So I just wanted something that was going to stand up to the abuse, and some of the other Garmin, sort of the Forerunner, more triathlon, multi-sport specific ones are focusing on just being light and small, and I didn't really care about that stuff. So that's why I used the Fenix 5, and I really like it. I mean, I've used it for a couple years. I've had Suuntos in the past, and I've always would come back to Garmin because it was either a reliability thing or the time zone would change, and then the whole thing got fucked up, and like it was reading workouts at a different time. And sort of the Garmin interface is just pretty seamless with whichever way you're recording, whether it's MapMyFitness or Strava or just Garmin Connect, that works pretty well. So yeah.
And how are you using the watch for when you do a swim run? How are you using the watch, and what kind of metrics are you looking at?
Yeah, so I've done a couple different things in our races, Chipper, where when we did Casco, I just had it on run so that I could get sort of a total time thing.
So you just had it on a run mode, like you were just going to go mode. For a trail run.
Exactly, which I've seen this happen with Garmin, but not Coros, which is another brand of a newer brand of sort of GPS running multi-sport watches, where if you just have it on run and you do a swim run, regardless of the distance, it'll show that your elevation is just ridiculous. So I think,
you know why that is?
Again, totally optional, and you want to record data, nothing but positive for the Fenix.
Cool. And that will run you, the Fenix series starts usually around $599. They do run kind of your Black Friday or your Cyber Monday type sales, and they do have refurbished.
Chris, what's the battery life on that?
It's really good. It's I don't know what it is, what it says on the box or anything, but I've done 100Ks with them. 15 plus hours. Okay. I think it's been, yeah, it's good.
And that's using it because we did that same race. Yeah. We did 100K with, and I don't think I
didn't change any.
We didn't
settings.
Really change anything. Yeah, we just kind of kept it going.
I have a question about battery life. Do you guys think, does it take up more battery when you're transitioning a lot? When you're switching from sport to sport?
I would say yes, because when you're doing in an activity, the screen brightness will like go down a little bit.
Yeah.
And you're sort of activating, you're like waking the device every time you press a button.
Yeah.
So all that kind of like those micro things add up, I would say.
Again, so that's something to think about with,
that's just my opinion.
With swim run, because I noticed with my watch it has one battery life. That might be, you know how DC Rainmaker just puts it out on a table and he lets it sit there until the battery goes down, and then that's the battery life. Well, mm-hmm. when you're doing swim run, you're always changing, obviously.
Yeah,
you're always transitioning, so you might need to calibrate for that.
Well, Brooke, what watch are you using?
Yes, I just wanted to segue into myself. I am using the Garmin Forerunner 735 XT, and I've been using it for almost 3 years now.
Nice.
And I absolutely love it. It was at the time the cheapest Garmin on the market that could calculate both open water and pool swim metrics.
Ooh.
Because what I was finding was, a lot of watches calculate pool swim metrics and open water distance, but not like your Swolf score.
Oh, interesting.
You know, your stroke speed, all of that. So this one does both, which I appreciate. So that's one good thing. Another good thing is, unlike Chris, I was all about size and lightness. And this is the, according to DC Rainmaker, the size of an Oreo, which is true. So it's very petite and small, and I can wear it at work, and it doesn't like stand out as like a look at me. I'm a big endurance athlete with my fancy watch. And it also has a really easy swim run configuration. So I've configured it. I have three swim run settings, one for like a run start, one for a swim start, and then an indoor swim run setting.
Do those through multi-sport or through other?
Everything through multi-sport. And then I just, you know, in the multi-sport configuration, you can have five activity profiles. So you just select four so that you can get swim, run, swim, run, swim. And then it automatically repeats. So you want to get that, you know, alternating sport.
Basically like take out, I guess we should just tell people how to do it. Yeah. If you have a Garmin, you do your custom multi-sport, you take out transitions and you just do swim, run, swim, run. So whenever you hit the lap button, it'll just switch, alternate between swim and run.
Or you use run, swim, run, swim.
Exactly.
Yeah. Or you use indoor run, pool, swim, indoor run, pool, swim.
And typically it's run, swim, run first. So you're running into the water. So
unless you're doing the Portugal race,
right,
and you're jumping off a boat.
That's a good point.
It's not even a boat. It's like a nice yacht.
Oh, wow. You're jumping off a yacht.
amazing.
And the only downside to this watch is, so the battery, again, says it has a 14-hour battery life, but my battery lasts just enough for like a 9-hour swim run. So
still a big day.
I was wondering what we would do for Worlds. Maybe I just wouldn't track it. But if we were to have gone to Worlds this year, the watch probably wouldn't have lasted, unless Annie and I totally rocked it at Worlds, wouldn't have lasted the duration of Worlds.
Well, if Worlds would have happened this year, I don't think anyone would have rocked it.
Yeah, totally. We would all have been suffering together, and all our watches would be dead at the end. And then it's not barometric altimeter. Is that how you pronounce it? Altimeter. Yeah. So the elevation accuracy is a little bit off, but I'm not super obsessed with that. So I'm okay with that.
And just a note, Brooke, the 735 XT is still the cheapest Garmin watch with a specific swim run setting.
Yes. And right now it's on Amazon for $222.
Damn.
That's a pretty good
which
deal.
Which is a steal.
Yeah. They're normally $349.
It's normally $350. Yeah. And it comes in like this cool, like teal blue color, which everyone knows I'm all about the looks.
They call it frost blue.
Ooh. Now, Suunto is also running a sale on their stuff as of the recording right now, which I did some research. The Ambit 3, which this is going to segue right into Annie, is regular $400. Suunto has it for $160 right now.
Damn,
they're just
and I would say the Ambit 3, from what I've looked at, and Annie, you can kind of go into more detail. Seems like the most comparable to the Garmin 735 XT.
Definitely. Yeah, let's talk about the Ambit series. So I've used my first GPS watch was a Suunto Ambit 3 Vertical, and at that time, they had a few different versions of the Ambit 3 sort of geared or tailored toward a specific type of athlete. And so I think just straight up Ambit 3 was more towards a running or traditional three-sport, multi-sport athlete. And then there was an Ambit 3 Peak, which had more... and so there was Ambit 3 Peak and Ambit 3 Vertical. And I think the Peak added altimeter, or it added altitude data, but it didn't have a barometric altimeter sensor. And then the Vertical, which is the one I had, has a barometric sensor. I got it because I was doing a ton of adventure racing and kind of long mountain adventures, ski mountaineering and stuff. And so the accuracy of the altitude data was really important for locating myself on maps and stuff. But other than the altitude data, I found this watch really user unfriendly. It was just, it did what I needed it to do, but I felt like I was constantly fighting with it. Like we just went through how to program your Garmin device for a multi-sport setting, custom multi-sport setting. You can do that right on the watch. The way that Suunto is set up, the only way to change the settings on your watch is to go into the firmware platform, like through the computer, and change everything on the computer and then sync your watch to the computer. Like, you can't do any on the fly adjustments. And I found that pretty frustrating because you kind of had to watch like a YouTube tutorial on how to do the tiniest thing on your watch. Just not intuitive. Doesn't pair very well with different platforms that you might upload your data to. Oh, I loved the color of the band. So that
was it that mossy gray?
No, it was like bright turquoise blue, my favorite color. And I wouldn't recommend using the band color as a way of deciding what watch to get. So anyway, I did use this.
Most of them valid
point.
Change,
that is a valid point. Well.
Yeah. Because it's the best band color in the industry. But as you can tell, the watch was a frustrating thing to use. But I'd spent a bunch of money on it, so I used it for a long time. And I used it with Swimrun. I never figured out how to create a multi-sport setting because it was so... you could customize the multi-sport setting, but I could never figure out how to do it. So I always just used it on a run or on a run setting and would just kind of...
But it does open water as well as pool.
It does open water as well as pool. Yeah. Yep. And so I could use it for those individual sports and that worked fine. The thing is huge. So on my scrawny little wrist, it looked like I was wearing like, I don't know, like a telescope or
something.
Like
when you're a kid and you take your dad's watch and it's like just dangling off your wrist.
Totally. Yeah. Like I once fell off my bike and I landed on my wrist.
Or like
and
Dick Tracy.
The biggest injury I sustained was from my watch on, like impacting my wrist. It was crazy. But all that said, it did the job. However, then I finally got fed up with it and I just took a look over to my Swimrun partner's wrist and said, I would like what's on her wrist, please. Oh. And Garmin 735 XT, I got it out of the box. It immediately synced to all my stuff. Like the Garmin platform is just really robust and compatible across a lot of other different fitness software. Like it's intuitive. It's awesome. I use my watch a little bit differently for collecting Swimrun data. And this is just my bias of when I'm swim running, I kind of go by feel. I look around me. I don't want to be pressing buttons. And when I'm done, I really enjoy looking back and being like, where did I go on the map today? And so one drawback of the multi-sport setting is that in the raw GPS file from the Garmin watch, you can see the fully mapped route that you took for your swim run. But if you if you use Strava and you upload it, you get these little like swim segment, run segment, swim segment. And there, if you get like 10 different activities, so you can't get that bird's eye view of what you've accomplished.
Right.
And that has pros and cons. Like I always just have Brooke tell me what our splits are and what our individual segment data is. And then I have configured my watch using a custom setting, but it's not in the multi-sport setting. It's just other. And I called it swim run. And I just kind of have set up the data screens to tell me the things that I want to know while I'm doing a swim run, which is typically just total time elapsed,
distance,
running pace, and time of day. So that is,
you know, it's lunchtime. We should take an extra little stop at the aid station.
I don't know why I want to know what time of day it is, but that's
good to orient yourself.
That's my sort of basic.
But you also have to deal with your race partner like me, who is pressing the buttons between each transition to be like pop up in the middle of the swim and be like, I forgot to press the button. pressing the button.
And I would say is to that, that just takes practice. Like that's almost, that needs to become second nature. And if you're,
yeah, it's part of your transition.
Practicing swimming
technique.
Yeah. It's making sure you hit your watch.
I find it interesting that both of our teams, each partner sort of relies on the other for a certain set of metrics. Like it's still teamwork on the watch front, which I didn't even think about. Until you guys said
it's
that.
It's a team, man.
Yeah. Well, I think it's
really
helpful.
It would be redundant to do double-double.
Yeah, I think it's really helpful. And maybe we should just transition now into sort of like just roundtable discussion.
I haven't given my two cents yet.
Yeah, we got it. What about Chip?
Okay, then I'm gonna table what I was going to say. Sorry,
nice
buddy.
Try.
Sorry, buddy.
Pushing him out.
Sorry, buddy.
Well, Chris. Hey, Annie, could you cue those crickets again?
Cue crickets.
I've been a Garmin person my whole
life,
a whole career, if you want to call it that, of multi-sport. So I started with the 910 XT, and then I think the 925 or
920,
the 920, and then I moved to the Phoenix series. So Chris and I have the same watch, I think. Mm-hmm. So all these. You know, the Phoenix series has like 8 different variations. So if you go on their site, and same with Coros and Polar, all these companies have like, they have the S, they have the V,
Sapphire.
The Sapphire, like all these different ones. So it gets really, really confusing. And it's kind of hard to really split what the features are for each variation. But I have been using the Phoenix 5 for probably 3 years now. The battery life is great. Again, ran 100K with it. Have done 15 plus hour events using GPS, and it's, you know, I finished, I had 20 or 30% battery left. Like it wasn't ever a stressor for me to have to worry about that.
And I would add a footnote to that, and it's still good. It's not like there's been degradation in the battery.
True.
Like it's not like an iPhone.
Yeah. When I go to do a swim run on the weekend, I'm like, oh, I look. And if I have, 40% battery, I'm not even worried about it. I know I can go for 6-7 hours and I'll be good still. So I do use the Garmin specific swim run setting, and that was actually the reason why I got the Phoenix. And yeah, like Annie said, whenever you do press lap, it sort of ends that activity you were doing and wraps it up in a bow and sends it off to Strava or wherever you're going. So after a swim run practice or an event, you'll have 15, 20, 30 different activities depending on how much, transitioning and everything there is. But yeah, I mean, kind of like what everyone else says, battery life's great. It does all, it tracks more things than I can even imagine wanting to track. I actually do like the Garmin Connect platform. I have been using that a little bit more.
Yeah, lots of data.
So much data.
Yeah,
like
it's
way
great
too much.
For just getting some good lenses into other lifestyle factors that are important for athletes.
And I don't use this watch as my everyday one, but I have sometimes, and it does, your steps and all that stuff. So that's my few cents on it. But and you can also replace the strap color. So I have a bunch of different straps. Chris and I bought a 15 pack on Amazon, all the knockoff different colors, and we just swap them out and stuff. Because we have the same
Oh,
watch.
Brooke, we should do that. That's a great idea.
Oh, my God. That's so
It's a good
cute.
Way to bedazzle. If you need some bedazzle in your life or some flair. If you want your watch to match your socks, your
tether color.
Your Sea Vengers.
Sea Vengers.
Oh, God.
Oh, my.
Not that again.
Had to be brought up.
Okay, everyone
take a shot. Oh, one other thing I forgot to mention is that at times when I would be really fed up with my Suunto, I would just put my phone is in a LifeProof case, and then I would put that in a waterproof little Ziploc sack. Mm-hmm. And then I'd stick that in the back pocket of my swim run wetsuit, and I could do a swim run just using the Strava record function. And I didn't need a watch. I mean, it's like, if you have a phone, you can get a lot of this data. It depends on what data you want, but you can get a lot of it just by putting your phone, stuffing it in your bra or in a pocket in your wetsuit.
And
if
sometimes
low tide boys and swim run labs are not responsible for phones.
Sometimes your swim run partner will get a call and just hear you huffing and puffing.
That's right.
And talking to other people on your swim run adventure.
I butt dialed Brooke from a swim run from my pocket, and I didn't know.
And she was like, it was like, I was like, so big time FOMO, like over in Spokane. I don't know any other swim runners like doing lonely soul swim.
And
runs.
I just hear this voice coming from inside my wetsuit being like, help.
You're like, not helpful.
Yeah. And I hear her just like chatting away with all her friends and going through a swim run. It was like I was living vicariously. It was great. Aww. I was on the adventure with you, Annie.
All right. So lovely. Transitioning to what Chris was going to transition to.
Yeah, I already forgot.
You forgot it. Okay. I think we should address now to get started, you can totally use what you have, barring that it's waterproof or water resistant. You know, I know Apple Watch is obviously wildly popular. The newer series 5 and whatever are water resistant. The Apple Watch is not a great. I've used it for running, and it's fine for, hey, I'm going to do a 10K jog around the block, and I don't want to like change watches and get GPS and all this stuff. But for swim run, it's not what the watch is made for. And I'll second that. Yeah, I don't think. And same with Fitbit as well. I checked out some of their watches there. So I do have a rundown of kind of all the different watches from the big manufacturers with that do support multi-sport specific. I can shoot those off real quick if we think it'll be helpful. Okay, so for Garmin, the Forerunner series, 935 XT and up do. And that includes their Tactics series and the Phoenix, and then their Descent series, which is a $1,000+ watch. For the Suunto, the Ambit series, they have a Spartan series, and then the Suunto 5, 7, and then the 9, which I think the 9's coming out like next week or something.
Brand new one.
Then there's definitely a new up-and-coming brand called Koros, which is more on the trail running ultra marathon side. Their watch offerings do look pretty slick. I will say I am curious to test some of those out. The Vertex, Apex Pro, and Apex all have multi-sport. And then the Polar, the Vantage, and the Grit have multi-sport settings. So those are kind of the main
and
four.
We're sure there are other ones, so don't add us. Like, hey, you forgot to mention, Casio. It's like, oh, sorry, dude.
Yeah, or, you know, G-Shock or something. I was only looking at stuff that had GPS and that had a multi-sport setting that you could do like what Brooke does with setting a swim, run thing up on. Yeah. So any other discussions? All of these watches, you can send your data to Strava, to Training Peaks, to Map My Run, Garmin. No, well, if you have a Garmin, it can go to Garmin Connect. Suunto has their own little app to analyze.
Called Moves. Moves Count is the name of their app. It's a terrible name, but
it
is what it is.
Do Annie and Brooke have any thoughts about where you're sending your data?
I send it to, when I've been using Training Peaks, I send it to Training Peaks, and then I do send it to Strava. I think just because I feel like Strava's like how I first started collecting data about my workouts a long time ago, and I'm attached to the people on Strava, and it's more of a social thing, but
and you're
it's also really functional
club. So we can all give you kudos and see what
exactly
cool
and
adventures
how
are
else
on.
Can you exactly let your Low Tide Boys Club people see what you're doing and see what they're doing. It's all about the community.
Yeah. And my data goes to Training Peaks pretty seamlessly, automatically uploads and then as well to Strava. And then just kind of what Annie mentioned, I'm doing it in segments, so it looks like I just went out on like 10 separate swims and 10 separate runs that day. But I'm kind of okay with that. I'm just trying to bombard people with my activity. So
sure. And I would say so there's a bunch of different sort of tracking software like Final Surge. There's just a bunch of different companies.
Oh, yeah, Final Surge.
And I think if you're not using one of those companies, you should make sure that whatever company you do use has sort of an automatic upload thing, because nothing is going to be more of a pain in the butt if you got to like then get the GPX file and upload it separately
to your app.
So yeah, there's really no reason why that should be happening. Yeah. So if that company is still in business, they won't be for very long if that's their model. It's a hot take. So I think, you know, overall, I think we've given people a lot of information to think about. We've told them about our experiences. I think I would just go right off the bat and say, you really can't go wrong with Garmin. You can get them used on eBay. You can, there's
or
ways
Facebook
to get
Facebook Marketplace or yeah, Craigslist or whatever.
You can definitely find those. And you just can't go wrong. I think if you're going with a more sort of exotic choice, then you really should do your research to make sure that it's going to sort of meet your needs.
Yeah. And they
and don't pick it for the band color.
Yeah. Yeah,
unless it matches your Sea Venger socks.
That's also a good point.
Then totally then pick it for the
most of these watches do go on sale at some regular cadence. So if it is a Labor Day thing or Black Friday or Cyber Monday, the most of the watches at your REI or other sporting goods store do go on sale. And then like Chris mentioned, most of the manufacturers that I looked at have refurbished watches. So if the watch is $500, you probably could get it for $350 or something like that. So if you're a little bit price conscious, there's still ways to get, you know, a really good swim run watch for not a ton of money. Like you can get the older model Phoenix 5 when they had the Phoenix 6 out, kind of thing. Just like with cell phones and stuff like that.
I think the other point I'll make that I think is worth mentioning is that you definitely don't need this to do swim run adventures or race. But I will say in a longer race, it can be very helpful to kind of know where you're at. So you can make decisions about nutrition, hydration, things like that. Understand how your day is going. Make important tactical decisions if that's what needs to be made. And sometimes just knowing what time of day it is will be enough. Yeah. But I think knowing...
You can set alarms like every 35 minutes and it will buzz on your watch. And you're like, oh, I need to eat something or take a sip. Yep. Or
well, and I think it's good for like looking back too. Like I know, like I'll look back at data from when Annie and I first started swim running in 2016 to now and just see how we've improved as a team during certain segments over the same course. Or so it's fun for analyzing your performance and seeing how far you've come.
Sure. Yeah. If you want to really go ballistic on analyzing the data, you know, these watches are going to capture more than you can ever imagine that you needed to capture. So
Like stride length, crazy. Like left leg or right leg. Like there's all this stuff that is just like, oh, I guess that's helpful for somebody.
But anyway, well, time's up on this episode.
You
were waiting for that moment to come. Shot,
like,
yeah, that'll be in there for sure.
He'll be performing in Yonkers next week.
Schenectady. As always, you can check this out on lowtideboys.com, and then there's also swimrunlabs.com. And Annie and Brooke, thank you, as always.
Thank you, guys. Until next time.
Ooh, yeah. Take us home. Take us home.
Wow. Wow. Okay, guys. And we're done.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Gear Talk with the Swim Run Labs. You can learn more about all things swim run at swimrunlabs.com.
If you have any questions or requests for us to review on the show, send us an email at lowtideboys@gmail.com.
Make sure you subscribe wherever you're listening to this and your other podcast and leave a review if you're so inclined.
We'd like to thank Riding Easy Records for our show music and, of course, Annie and Brooke for sharing their wealth of knowledge with us.
We'd like to give a huge shout out to our wives for letting us do this sort of stuff. And until next time, be sure to go out there and go for a swim.
And then a run.
And then another swim.
And then a run.
Might as well throw another swim on there.
And a run.
And then just keep going.
Okay. Don't stop. Won't stop.
Can't stop.